the turn. It's time for discussion and interviews about the world of golf you won't hear anywhere else. Here are your hosts, Nick Heidelberger and Joe Simons.
Hello, hello. Welcome into another episode of At the Turn. Joe and Nick with you, rolling into April. I can smell the azaleas from here. It's right around the corner. Masters Week is next week. We'll be doing a full-blown preview with Dane Delgado, president, CEO, head designer of Matchstick Golf. That's coming next week. This week, a very prescient topic as people dust off the golf clubs. Getting hit into and hitting into other people. The protocol, when to get upset, when to be calm. Nick, you've hit a bunch of people before, haven't you?
All the time. Yeah, every day.
Do you ever apologize?
No, you just kind of look at the ground, look at your feet, look at your playing partners, pretend it was somebody else. You avoid all confrontation at all costs, and you just hope you never see that person again.
I love it. A reminder, please rate and review the podcast. Make like Jake Schwab, who left a fantastic over-the-top review recently. Just be effusive in your praise of the podcast so we get up the standings in whatever form and format they are. You know the drill. 5 stars. How does Nick's audio quality sound? Nick, it was Easter yesterday. We're recording this on Monday the 1st, and I see on your Easter egg hunt, you weren't able to locate your podcast microphone yet.
No, I have given up trying. It's a needle in a haystack. It's just...
You've given up?
No, I've given up trying for the time being. I am closing on a new house on Friday.
Oh my God, amazing.
Yeah, I couldn't.
Are you guys moving this weekend?
No, we're going to do a couple projects.
Sure.
We might actually, the sellers are elderly, and they floated the idea of renting back for a couple weeks to help get them all their stuff out. We got to do the fence. We got to do a couple safety things. So we've got our place till May 31st. I think we'll be in the new place solidly unpacked by the end of the month. So come May, I will be tearing through boxes looking for the microphone. It's in one of like 14 70-gallon plastic tubs. I don't know how big those things are. The big yeah, huge tubs.
That sounds awful.
We were so terrible at moving. We were just throwing everything. Like, we were organized for like the first two nights, and then after that, we were just taking a box, throwing everything into it. They're like shoving some blankets in between, taping it up, labeling it stuff, and shoving it in the garage. So like it could be anywhere. But I will go through those boxes. There's just no point in doing it right now.
I totally get it. It's like, why would I unpack stuff when I just have to pack it back up and move it again so soon? Like, it's already in its final form. Let's just wait till we get to the new place. And again, your audio,
yeah, good enough.
It's definitely good enough. It's good enough.
See, get degrees, man. That's all I'm saying.
I love it. You're breaking 90 every week with this audio quality. You're not scaring Eddie, but you're staying right there in the mid 80s, and God bless you for it. Speaking of scores, it is time for the handicap report. It is brought to you by, what's a good moving company in Moscow? Do you know?
I don't know, but there's a real estate brokerage in town. This is a genius idea, and they have a moving truck. And when you buy a house with them, you get to use their moving truck for a weekend.
What's and who are they? Do you know what?
It's called Magenta. I don't know anything about them, but it's called Magenta. We didn't use them.
Handicap Reports brought to you by Magenta in beautiful Moscow, Idaho, the gem state. Nick, I played around this weekend. This is very much, I'm cracking open the freezer. I'm unthawing the humble pie because I have to have a big slice of it. Do as I say, not as I do.
Oh no, Joe. Oh no.
Now look, I knew the greens were punched recently.
No!
I knew they were punched recently, but I still wanted to get out to work on the ball striking. Oh, I get to Stone Creek, pipe one down the first fairway. The ball looks so good in the air, I thought to myself, did I just make a 2 on my first iron swing? I hit it to 5 feet. I get to the green and I'm like, there's no way I'm gonna make this putt. There's no
the
way.
Exact scenario you painted.
I know.
In your plead last week.
I know. Oh, so I missed the birdie putt. I tap in for par. I actually hit 8 greens, hit the ball very well, hung a 90 on the board, had 37 putts. What's interesting is this round wasn't posted. This was a men's club round. It wasn't posted by Stone Creek Men's Club. And I think that, and I haven't confirmed this because this round was on Saturday. It's been a couple of days. Usually pretty quick about posting it. I'm pretty sure they're not going to post it because we had something like 8 1-handicappers or better. So a lot of really good players, a lot of scratch players. No one broke 80 out there. And
it would have been a great day for a PCC.
Well, that's kind of the thing, because now we're at a point, and I want to talk through this with you, because now we're at a point where I've lost my potential for the men's club round to impact the PCC. So I shot 90 with two quads and a triple. And going through the net double bogey, I would shave four strokes off it. So we're down to 86. Let's say I got a PCC of
like,
two.
It's like itemizing your taxes. I love this. It's perfect for this time of year.
Now we're down to...
My deductible is down
to... I mean, honestly, and that's conservative. I could have gotten potentially five, but I think with how many strokes I got, I would have shaved four strokes from the 90 down to an 86. Then let's say I get a PCC of two, which is certainly possible considering the enormous differentials of people that I saw their scores posted compared to their handicaps. Now I'm down to an 84 from the Blues at Stone Creek, which is a differential of like nine. So I'm in the realm of possibility. But now if I post a 90 on the board, it's going to be an 86, maybe an 87 if I was off by a stroke, and that differential is going to be like 14 or 15. So ethically, I don't really know the right thing to do. It feels like ethically the right thing to do is move on. Because the greens were punched, if it was a normal round with greens, I would go the other way. But because they were punched, I think it's correct to not post this round. Am I being crazy? Should I just post it and suck it up and move on?
Well, it's a learning experience, because next time, the ideal situation would be, you know, if that they're not going to post it, and then you post it that day, right? But you're right, like, you don't really want to post it, and you're not going to get, because that PCC, for sure, I'm buying that 100%, that like, yeah, you're going to get a couple strokes there. And it's a fringe round. Like, it goes from you know, if it's a nine and you're an eight handicap,
right,
like, it's going to count. It's going to help you. And if it's a 13 or 14, it's not going to help you. So
it's a pretty big swing.
I think I'm okay with you not posting it. I think ideally you would know if they're not going to post it, and then you would just post it that day. Yeah, it's a little bit too bad, but it's I think you're cool with not posting it.
They're so good with posting. That's why I was apprehensive about making any moves. So I'm not going to post it. I'm going to leave it alone. For now, we're hanging out at an 8.2. It's going to be 70 degrees here tomorrow in Portland on a Tuesday. The boys have nine holes lined up. We're very excited for it. So hopefully we can do some damage. Flushing the golf ball, Nick, flushing the golf ball. So I'm very excited for my prospects.
Yeah, I love that. And your nine-hole round is just going to count the same as an 18-hole round. Like, I think I'm going to log a lot of nine-hole rounds. Number one, for that reason, I think it's probably easier to post a decent score on nine than it is for 18. And number two, like, it's just easier for my schedule. Now that I have a golf course that's 5 minutes away, it's a lot easier to go out. Like, I can go door to door in probably like an hour, 45 minutes and get nine in. Whereas before, the course was 25, 30 minutes away. There's no point in playing that. I'd have to play 18 just to make it worth it for that drive. So, yeah.
Well, and now that we're in the middle of, not middle, but now that we're like firmly into golf season, it's April, you know, schedules get tough. One of my guys in my foursome, he's got like a brand new baby, like 5 months old. So I think like nine holes twilight is kind of the way to do it, especially with the way handicaps work now, being able to use that as essentially a full round with just getting nine holes in. There's no stress. Like, we're going to tee off at 4:30. It's not like, oh, we got to hustle to get things. It's like, no, I'm going to go to the practice green, have a beer, chip and putt, and I hope we tee off the back. We can kind of chill, and sun doesn't set till 7:30. So should be a good time. I'm really looking forward to it, and we'll see how it helps the old number. Trying to get down but around to a seven, Nick. I think I can get to a seven by the time I get to Idaho, which I think is what we need to not embarrass ourselves in the gold flight, right?
Yeah, I actually don't think we're going to embarrass ourselves in the gold flight. Just if I'm being honest, I did just shoot 100 the other day, so that was embarrassing, but it was. You don't really, like, for me personally, I'm not really embarrassed if I, like, miss a bunch of 8-foot putts where I should have made two of them, as I am, like, if I'm spraying the ball every direction and, like, I can't control a slice or a hook, or, like, I'm hitting out of bounds into every penalty area. That's not going to be a problem for us. Like, I'm making decent contact. I look like a ball striker. At least I can, like, act like I belong in the gold flight from, like, a full swing standpoint, which is a little bit uncharted territory for me. Just got a lot of rust on my game. Like, so I just double bogeyed myself to death. Like, yeah, there was no blow up holes. It was just like, I'm right near the green, and then like two chips and two putts, and it's a double bogey, you know? And it was just like, all right, I feel like you can make a lot of progress on your short game in a short period of time. So I'm going to do that for the next 4 weeks, and I think we'll be good to go.
Early season stuff. It's early season stuff. I think we're both fine. Nothing to get too excited about at this point.
For sure. Joe, I got to ask you.
Yeah.
Normally you give me like an opportunity at the intro to do some non-golf stuff. Mm-hmm. You know, you kind of jumped right into it today, but like, what's going on with the basketball court floor measuring devices in Portland, Oregon? Do we need to have like some sort of intervention? Portland's in the spotlight for the wrong reasons right now.
Yeah. Fascinating story. If you're not aware, they are having the Sweet 16 and Elite 8 contests in Portland, some of them at least, really good matchups. And it was discovered that the three-point line was a different distance on one side of the court than it was on the other side of the court. And God bless the two teams. Who was it? Texas A&M and I can't remember the other team, but they
were Texas and NC State.
Texas and NC State. Yeah. And they decided, like, you know what? Let's just play. What are we going to do? Everyone's excited.
The coaches didn't tell the players, and they just said, like, this is our primetime window. We're not going to blow it while you fools put down tape on the court and like whatever. So yeah.
Well, Lace and I were talking about this, and you and Ash would probably know better than us, given your positions in collegiate athletics past and present. Who's doing that? Is it someone? It's like the facility, right? It's not the NCAA, because I saw the reports that the NCAA discovered that it had happened, inferring that the NCAA weren't the ones that put the line down incorrectly.
Yeah, I'm sure there are all sorts of contracts for these types of things. And I'm sure that Portland had to put in a bid. And I'm sure this, you know, having these services as part of the bid and part of the deal. I don't know the specifics. But like, for example, University of Idaho hosted like the first and second round men's games in Spokane. And when you're the host, you know, you're probably responsible for like some facilities for some game operations. Yeah. I'm sure the arena is responsible for like things like lines in the court. Like the NCAA shouldn't have to come in and like measure the lines in the court. Like you should assume certain things are going to be in place, and that's one of them. So the NCAA, ultimately it falls on them, and I'm sure like the fringe casual fans who don't really understand are like, NCAA is so dumb. But like, look, yeah, ultimately it would be nice to like confirm these things, but you shouldn't have to confirm the lines or the right distance when you're hosting like an Elite Eight college basketball game.
Not a great look for my hometown. Be interesting to see when and if we get NCAA basketball back to the Rose City. Considering, I mean, that's about as big of a screw up as you could possibly have, right? Other than like maybe the rim is 9.5 feet instead of 10. Like that's the only other thing I can think of to be as bad as this.
Yeah, and the pictures are pretty funny, because when you see the picture and you see the headline, it's like instantly obvious. Like you might not notice it if they just said like, "What's wrong with this picture?"
Right.
But it's pretty funny. It's kind of fascinating that the coaches were like, "We're just gonna play." Neither of the coaches told their teams. Like the head coach was like, I'm not telling them. We're just going to play. I don't want them thinking about it. And like, you know, I'm kind of surprised, because like if there are any close three pointers with a toe on the line on the long one, like would the refs just, you know what I mean? Like, is it a three? Is it a two? How do you decide? And then the other thing that fortunately didn't happen, but they said if there were to be overtime, it would have been an issue, because you don't get to switch halves of the court.
100%.
Like it's, all of a sudden it's a tie game, chance to go to the Final Four.
Just play bump. Just play bump to decide who goes to the Final Four at that point.
We're just gonna take it back to half court and play half court. Like, yeah, that would have been embarrassing. It's embarrassing either way. Anyways, I digress. I just had to get that in there. But let's talk about more.
No, very, very embarrassing. That is sort of the punched greens of college basketball, I would say. Okay, just real quick to put a button on it. You have South Carolina or the field on the women's side?
I have the field.
You do?
Because I have UConn.
Oh, come on. Of course. So you're going for the double UConn?
I in my men's bracket, I didn't actually pick UConn, but the way they've been playing right now,
it's
pretty unbeatable.
I actually have Purdue over Alabama in the final. So if that happens, I win all the money, but it's nice. Going to suck, because I'm going to flip on that UConn-Alabama game and it's going to be like 17-2. I'm just going to be like, all right, well, this is no fun at all. Anyway, college basketball, what a hoot. Okay, Nick, do you want to start with getting hit into or hitting into others?
God, that's a good question.
Both are so good.
I think hitting into others. I think we kind of ease into it, because getting hit into, I think we might get a little bit more worked up.
Well, as if the golf gods themselves were shining on me at the 12th hole at Stone Creek Golf Club, I, in fact, had the opportunity to hit into somebody, and by God, I almost did it. So let me set the stage. We play in foursomes at the Stone Club Men's Creek. Excuse me. Oh, I didn't get much sleep last night. Stone Creek Men's Club. We play in foursomes. Well, two guys bailed in our group, so I had to play in a twosome in a sea of foursomes. And I got to say, I play with a guy I never played before, Chad. Had a great time. Drink a little whiskey. Smoke a stogie. Had a really, really nice morning. It was the 12th hole, and we weren't pressing the guys at all. We were just taking our time because what's the point, right? Like on a par five, just chill, just relax. The only bummer is you're in a twosome. You can't like chip and putt on the green to kill time because if you get one of these old heads out here that sees you do that, they're going to drive over and scream at you. And it's like, all right, well, this is a fun club to be in. So we just chilled. We relaxed. 12th hole, I hit it in the trees. Bit of a banana ball. You got trouble left. I don't care. I'll bail out right. And I have like 215 to the green, and I have a 3-iron in my hand, and I have a little window, but I'm pretty comfortable with that shot because I've done it a lot in my life. And I think, all right, I'll just kind of punch it back and play. And it's one of those shots where as soon as you hit it, when you're trying to like basically do a half swing, but you feel the ball compress in a way that maybe you haven't felt the whole round, you're like, oh, shit.
The swing that makes you feel like I should always take a half swing.
Yes, exactly. Why am I ever putting effort into this? And it just comes out like a rocket exactly on line. And instead of it landing like 80 yards in the fairway, which I would have considered to be like an A minus B plus result, it like goes like 200 yards and it rolls, I don't know, 5 yards away from the green. But all these guys were on the green. And so I come down and one of the guys is kind of looking back at me with his hands on his hips. And I just yelled, sorry, sorry, like as loud as I could. And my playing partner was like, did you see that guy look at you? And I was like, yes, yes. I was just trying to defuse the situation. He was in no danger. The ball rolled 20 yards to get to him. It's not like it flew and landed there. No one was in danger. I didn't do anything wrong. And Chad proceeds to say, hey, look, if anything goes down, I'm with you. You didn't do anything wrong there. You didn't do
Chad's got your back.
Anything wrong there. And the group that I didn't really hit into, kind of hit into, that was the stud foursome. Those guys are all plus. And none of them broke 80. So presumably they weren't having a great time and they were looking for any excuse to get mad at somebody. I say all that. I think that when the ball rolls up to somebody, no matter the situation, no one should ever be upset. I don't think there's ever a scenario in which you hit into somebody or somebody hits into you and the ball is rolling where you are, where you should be upset. You just shouldn't. If it landed and bounced and then rolled close to you, that's something different. But if the ball is rolling, if you're not in any danger, I know your instant reaction is to say, what is going on? But just take a second, think about it. You should not be upset. That's my position. Never be upset if the ball is rolling.
Yeah, I agree. And that's the perfect time to hit into somebody. Like when it's either a shot like that where it's just not what you anticipated. If you just blast it in the other fairway, obviously, like, you're not doing that on purpose. That happens from time to time. And then the last time is when, like, maybe it's a short par four or, like, a long shot into a par five, and you're like, if I hit them or if I hit into them, it would take a great shot. One where they're more, like, more likely to clap than scream. Like, that's okay. Like, I think on number 10 at U of I, like, I might reach like the fringe of that green like one or two times this year. I'm probably not waiting for the green to clear ever. Like if I smash one out there and compress it and whatever, and it just goes, like, hey man, I'll ask for forgiveness, not permission. I'm not going to wait for that green to clear every single time on the off chance that I hit the shot of the year.
So what about 9 at U of I, which is uphill?
Yeah, same thing.
I think, well, it's so weird. I don't want to get too much into this one golf course, but I feel like I hit 9 way more often than 10, which is not to say I hit 9 very often, but it's like, I feel like I hit 9 one out of 10 times, and I hit 10, I don't know if I ever hit 10. Like, for some reason, that shot is just harder, even though it's technically shorter and easier. Does that make sense?
Yeah, the 10 is way easier because it's straight and it's downhill. It's the same distance. The tee box and greens are next to each other. It's the same distance. One's uphill, one's downhill, and one's straight, and 9 has a little bit of you got to cut a tree a little bit. I don't even really go, like, I played the other day, I just hit a 5-wood off 9 because I don't want to go out of bounds.
So the driving range is left, so that
yeah,
the banana ball for a lefty is out of bounds there.
Yeah, I think that anytime you drive a par, if you're putting on a par four and a ball like lands on the green or bounces up onto the green, like you're like, cool, good shot, bro. Like you're not really mad unless it's like a 240 yard
par. Yeah,
like,
there's
it's really a par three.
There's a couple par fours in the Portland area where you do have to wait. I think both of them are at the Glendevere golf course. One is like from the Whites, it's like 240, and the other one is like 250 downhill from the Whites. So you kind of have to wait on those.
Yeah.
Even though most people don't hit them, it really slows down play. That was my big rant a couple of years ago about how you need to put signs and bells to like let people hit and all that kind of shit. But again, I digress. I do agree. I think generally speaking, if someone executes a great shot, or if you execute a great shot and you have the wherewithal to like understand the context of what's just happened, I think you're going to react normally. I just think that bad people react badly on the golf course. Like, I've never met someone who I thought was like a really cool, good person, and they've been in like these 50-50 scenarios and reacted the other way and been like, wow, I definitely think the same about that person. Like, it's weird to me when someone reacts really crazy on the golf course to a situation where they're not in imminent danger, but they have the opportunity to be a dick and they choose to be a dick.
Right, exactly. It's like you're exactly right. You have the choice. There is a fine line of like, okay, I can just let this go. These people are going to be a few hundred yards away from me for the rest of the day. Or I can have a confrontation right here, right now on the golf course. And I think this kind of leads right into the when you're getting hit into, because we were kind of faced with this exact scenario at Palouse Ridge a couple of weeks ago.
Oh, yeah.
So we, Martinik, Romy, and I played out there. The first couple holes, we were a little bit slow. We were looking for balls on one, looking for balls on three. The ranger comes up behind us on five. He's like, you're doing great. Don't worry about time. But then he comes up to us on six. Like, we're coming off of six. And he's like, I've gotten three calls from the group behind you. You know, we're like, well, that's weird.
What?
Because we played those next two holes quickly and whatever. And he's like, just like, don't spend too much time looking for balls. And we're like, okay, whatever.
Three calls in six holes?
Yeah, I'm like,
oh,
that's
my
weird.
God.
Because like, you just told us everything was all good. So whatever. He's like, they're members, they're regulars. Like,
of course
whatever.
They are. Yeah.
So I know. So then they start hitting into us. Like, it happened like two or three times where it's like, we're in the fairway, they hit their drives. Ooh. And we're like, you know, and the second time, I kind of look back and we kind of look at each other. And Roby made the good point. And it's kind of like the decision you make. It's like, okay, we could like hit their ball out of bounds. We could pick it up. And it's like, we could hit it back at them. Or we can just move on. And the question you have to ask yourself is, do I want a confrontation in the parking lot? Because there's three or four of you. There's three or four of them. You kind of get the mob mentality of like, yeah, you know, everyone's kind of getting worked up, feeding off each other. And you're going to finish your round at the same time. Like, inevitably, you're going to cross paths in the parking lot, in the grill room, wherever. So, like, you have to decide, like, do I want to like have a confrontation with these people, or do I just want to enjoy my Sunday? So ultimately we decided to enjoy our Sunday. They were like hit with one time they hit into us. We look back and the guy's like got his arms in the air, you know, and it's like, what's going on? Ranger came back on the 16th hole. He's like, ignore these guys, your pace. Like, we finished in 4 hours. We had a good pace on a Sunday. Like, Sunday was like a 67 degree Sunday in March. But on the 17th hole, if you're not familiar with Palouse Ridge, it's a par five, and there's water in front of the green. And we're putting on 17. Specifically, Martinik is putting on 17. And they hit. So the water is right in front of the green. Like, you have to carry the water to reach the green.
Yeah, you basically lay up or you go for it, but you have to carry it over the water to go for it.
Right. They hit two balls into the water, like essentially warning shots while Martinik is putting. Like, he's on the 17th putting and they're hitting balls into the water right behind him. And it was like, it was really like such a bad look. Like, they were trying to start shit and we're just like, all right, we're gonna let it go. We're basically done with our round, but like, what are these fools doing?
How old are these guys? Our age?
No, older. 50s.
Yeah, of course.
Yeah.
Just That just makes me sad for Pullman, Washington. Truly, it does. A place where I lived 5 years. Like, I just wish people would behave better, especially considering what was there before Palouse Ridge. When I was in college, it was a nine-hole piece of shit that I loved. Don't get me wrong. But now they have this championship golf course, and everyone has to have a snooty attitude. You play in 4 hours, and they're still coming after you. Like, I have to admit, I would probably have to be talked down a little bit, only because that kind of stuff really aggravates me. Like, you guys were doing absolutely nothing wrong. You were looking for golf balls. You picked up your pace of play. You got validation from the marshal. I think cooler heads prevailed, and that was very, very smart. But for someone to hit into you in a fairway, do that multiple times, and then especially the thing on 17 where they're just plunking balls in the water, like, they're firing missiles at you, like, this is crazy behavior.
Yeah, and it's not like it was clearly warning shots. It wasn't like they were playing their ball and, like, trying to go for the green. Even if they were, they shouldn't have been doing that. But they're just intentionally, like, dropping them in the water right behind us as warning shots on 17. Like, what are you – I don't know. It just makes no sense. But, again, it's the mob mentality, because if you're playing by yourself, you're not doing that.
No,
you're just feeding off of, like, some guys, like, oh, these guys are slow. And you're like, oh, yeah, I'll show them. You know, you just kind of, like, build each other up. It's don't do that, people.
It's true. You're just getting yourselves very, very aggro, very, very upset. For no reason. Slow play is never, let's be clear, slow play is never a justification for hitting into somebody. There really isn't ever a justification. There's never a justification for hitting into somebody on purpose. I just cannot think of a single reason why you would put somebody in danger on a golf course intentionally. This is a leisurely recreational activity that you're supposed to be out there. Like, maybe if you are in danger or, like, a bear is coming at you and clearly it's going to attack you, then yes.
The only way to save yourself from a bear is to hit this 3-iron. Get the 3-iron.
Yeah, I was going to say 3-iron too. It's got to be a low shot. It's got to be a stinger right into the bear. That's the only way you can do it. I just otherwise can't really justify that. Although I don't know if I could imagine a more chill threesome than you, Martinik, and Romy. Probably three of the most relaxed guys. I'm the lunatic out of you four, and I would consider myself to be a pretty laid back guy too. But out of the four of us, I'm probably the most hyper. But even then, like, it's just a really, really weird situation that happened to you guys. I'm proud of you for keeping your cool. Proud of Romy for making so many birdies in the face of all that, and an eagle.
He made an eagle and five birdies.
So yeah, I love it. Imagine if he wasn't getting hit in two, what he would have shot.
I know.
One thing that I do want to go back to and to hit it into others. Now, when you miss the fairway, or sometimes there's a couple situations where I will tee off intentionally into the wrong fairway for a better angle on a par five. There's one at Stone Creek. There's one at Rose City. When I do that, I yell as loud as I possibly can for. And I must say, that is the best. Because you yell as loud as you can for a couple of reasons. One, primarily, you want to make sure people are aware and everyone is alert. And, like, if anyone with an earshot is, like, kind of looking up and ducking and making sure that they're bracing themselves.
Do you yell before you swing, or you just swing and yell, like instantly?
So in a situation like that, so there's two par fives back to back on Rose City, and 10, you really can't get to the green into playing 10. It's completely blocked off by trees to the right. You have to hit an enormous slice to do it, and even then it's pretty difficult. So if you hit it up 11, you can hit it over some smaller trees and you have an excellent angle to attack the flag. So if I'm playing well, I'll usually hit it up 11. I try to wait when there's someone not in the fairway, right? If I see someone on the tee or, like, on the green, you know, I'm not, like, intentionally hitting into people, but I don't know where people are sometimes. So what I'll do is I'll hit, and if it's going on 11, I will just scream as loud as I can, 4 on 11, 4! You know, just basically do that. But no, not before I hit. And it's the same, even if you're hitting a big slice or a big hook, just scream 4. One, you're keeping people safe. Two, it's sanctioned yelling on the golf course. I never understand people that give, like, a wimpy 4 yell. Why would you do that? You are sanctioned to yell at the top of your lungs. It's cathartic if you've done it, like if you hit a terrible shot and yell four, because you get to get that out of your system. You get a yell four, and you just feel better about it. You're protecting people. That's one of the most fun things people do on the golf course that they don't take advantage of. Screaming four. Try it next time. Even if you're on the edge and you're not sure, just yell four. It feels so good. It's cathartic.
I agree with that.
Are you a yeller of four?
I am. I used to kind of like be embarrassed to yell four, but then like, yeah, you're absolutely right. Like I don't really pronounce the F. I just kind of go right into the O, and like it's like almost like apostrophe O-R-E. What I do?
You yell or.
Yeah. Or maybe you can kind of subtly hear the F, but yeah, it's really I just go right into there. So. Yeah, no, I enjoy that.
That's so funny because that's how I say good shot. I don't say good shot. I just go shot. So it's basically like apostrophe shot, and that's what the good is in front of it.
Exactly.
I also like yelling four because when you're in someone else's fairway, I kind of get my rocks off on this when like I'm in the way of another group and I have to pull off this awesome shot in order to get back and play, and I just stripe it in front of another group and I don't really say anything to them. And someone says like, oh, good shot. Like I love that because basically you're not, you haven't made a declaration of war. Hopefully these people are on your side. They're just like, let's hope this guy gets the ball back and play. And then you execute.
In one.
Yeah, exactly. And then you execute a good shot from another fairway. That's one of the best.
Yeah. It's the best. The opposite. I know we're way off track.
But no, this is great.
That, like the absolute worst is when you're in somebody else's fairway and you're feeling the pressure and you're nervous and you're rushing and you just chunk it and you chunk it. And it just takes like five, like because you're not taking the time to hit a shot. You end up taking four shots and digging up the entire hole that they're playing.
The way
just like I just need to get off this golf course.
The way that I always approach that, and I think about it this way, is what's going to take more time? Me hitting three really bad shots quickly or me taking my time and executing one awesome shot? And to me, I always, that is when I gather myself the most. And it sounds dumb, but I do feel like sometimes, remember when we talked to the mental game coach and he's like, you know, when you got to hit it through the trees and you got to hit a hook and it's got to be a certain height, you pull that shot off a lot. But when you're in the middle of the fairway, sometimes you struggle. And I'm like, yes. And he's because you really visualize something. And I feel like when you're in another fairway, I have a tendency to do that too. Cause it's like, not necessarily pressure, but like, it's time to step the hell up and execute the shot. And I just feel like sometimes in another fairway, That's what's happening. I don't know. Anyway,
yeah, no, exactly.
Yell four. I guess the like the three or four things would be yell four. Try to defuse the situation. Never hit into anyone else on purpose, and just apologize. If you make a mistake, just apologize. Like we've always said on this show, 99% of the golfers that you encounter are just like you. They're out there to have a good time. Sometimes you'll be in front of some dickheads at Palouse Ridge that are hitting into you and dunking balls in the water while Martinik's trying to make a birdie. That's very, very rare that that's happened. I mean, how often has that actually happened to you, Nick? Like once, right?
Yeah, exactly.
Just the one time. So getting hitting into others, just play it cool, man. Just don't overreact. Everything's fine. You're on a golf course. You could be doing yard work right now, but you're not. Okay. With that, it is time for the Mad Golfer of the Week. We're going to TPC San Antonio, the site of this week's Texas Open. A lot of the big boys are playing. Kind of surprised. People trying to knock the rust off. Roars is going to play. Hideki is going to play. I'm very interested in his result this week. Chris Prater, not too impressed. He says, quote, pretty disappointed with TPC San Antonio. The cost for my wife and I to play was $700 on a Sunday at 11 a.m. At $700, you expect great service, and there was none. We sat and waited for someone to load us on a cart for nearly 15 minutes. No one came, so we ended up just loading ourselves. Same thing at the end of the round. No one to offer to wipe down the clubs or anything.
Oh, man.
The course was great, but we will probably not be back. We will stick to Horseshoe Bay Resort, where they actually care about their golfers. That's a 2-star review from Chris Prater.
I would love to see like what they were doing while they're waiting for someone to come to their car and load up their clubs. Like, nobody knows they're there. Nobody cares. It's like they're waiting to be seated at like a McDonald's or something. They're just standing there and everyone's like, yeah, dude, you got to do this.
Well, I have the opposite approach. I feel kind of uncomfortable when people are like taking my clubs and loading them up. Like, I'm very happy to give someone a tip, a couple bucks for doing that. But it's like, I'm a 38-year-old guy. I'm very, very capable of picking up a bag of, like, I brought the clubs to this point. Clearly, I can carry golf clubs. Yeah. I've done enough. I'm going to be swinging these later. I can load them into the cart. Like,
I'm going to be swinging these later.
It's like, so it's fine. Everything's fine. Chris Pratt, congrats. You are our mad golfer. Would it be funny if that was Chris Pratt and he just leaves bad reviews as Chris Pratter?
He's like, I got to go under an alias. I'll just add an ER at the end.
And with that, it is now time for Nick Rolls, brought to you by Matchstick Golf. Use promo code TURN20 at checkout.
I've got a rule here today that I broke over the weekend, and I plan to continue to break this rule, and I'm wondering if it's something that the USGA needs to take a second look at for pace of play reasons. And I've been on here preaching, hit a provisional ball when you think your ball might be out of bounds. You cannot hit a provisional ball for a penalty area, right? But I think when we think of penalty areas, we think of water hazards, right? If you hit your ball into the water and you see a splash and you know exactly where it is, you don't take a provisional. But at U of I, and I hope at some other courses, because I think this is a good way to improve pace of play, they're making places where people lose their balls but are inbounds and not water, they're marking those with red stakes now, which I think is helpful, because rather than if you take a lost ball, you're going back or whatever it is you're doing, you just take a stroke and drop it. So one of those areas is the sixth hole at U of I. It's a par five. It's like a 45 degree slope. And on the right, at the top of the slope, it's just like tall weeds and stuff.
If I may, you have to miss it so far right to be up there. You do.
No, not really.
Did they change it from last year?
Well, the fairway, I mean,
let me put it this way.
But the fairway is much more narrow.
Okay, I'm sorry to interrupt, but let me just put it this way. You can literally miss 150 yards to the left of where the penalty area is and still have a shot into the green in two.
Well, kind of. However, Joe,
I'm so sorry. Number one,
they've really pinched the fairway in. Number two, there's a drainage ditch that goes between 6 and 7, and that's also red. They have marked that with red. So you can't just blast it left because there's trees, there's penalty area, whatever. Anyways, I pole hooked one up there.
Ooh.
And I know it's up there, but it's not really grown in yet, right? It's definitely going to be potentially findable, but it's in the red. And if I take my drop, like where it crossed the red would be like not too far up from the tee box. So I'm like, all right, I'm not going to go search for my ball 250 yards up there and then walk 200 yards back and take a drop. So I played a provisional. I went to, up past the tee boxes where my drop would be. I played a provisional just in case I don't find the other one. And then I took a look, 3 minutes, found my ball, played it, and moved on. What should I be losing sleep over this, or is this the right play?
I think what you're doing is technically it's incorrect, but I think what you're doing is correct. Like, I think that's the way to handle it, because you're improving pace of play at that point. What you're doing is you're putting a ball in play, and then if you were with other people, let's say, you could then look for your ball. If you didn't find it, great. Now you're line 3, I guess, in the fairway. And if not, you could hit out of the penalty area and on you go. But yes, right, it is difficult, because the letter of the law would be once you drop, that's your ball.
Right, correct. That's how it would be. But I chose to apply a different interpretation, my own interpretation.
Model local rule.
Exactly. It's a Nick local rule, but it makes sense. I'm not violating the spirit of the game.
No.
Because I think those rules were written with like water in mind. And also a lot of those circumstances, the drop is going to be lateral from where your ball ended up. But in a situation like this where the hazard is parallel with the hole, the drop would be so much farther back that it's almost the same as playing a provisional for a lost ball. So anyways, that's what I did. I'm not losing any sleep over it. There's like 3 or 4 holes. They keep adding a few more at U of I. I'm going to continue to play that way because a lot of times I play by myself. It improves pace of play. Maybe you find it, maybe you don't. I'm not going to take 10 extra minutes to walk back 200 yards and follow the rules.
I think what you're doing is absolutely correct, and I applaud you for it. I couldn't disagree more about the red stakes at U of I. I think it's awful. I think it's cost me strokes since I've played with things that way. Let me look for my ball. Let me look for my ball.
You can find it and play it. You can always find it and play it. It just makes it, if you don't find it, instead of a lost ball, it's just one stroke.
Okay. I liked, the reason I'm complaining about it, I know we're getting way too U of I right now. The reason I'm complaining about it is because I liked having that bailout area left by the par three on number four. I liked being able to hook it down there and then hit a wedge back up and still have a two putt for par. And now if I hook my second shot, well, the grass has grown up so much when I get there in June, it's like Shinnecock. I'm not going to find anything in there except ticks, and I'm not going to go look for my grass. That's not worth a stroke.
It was always that way. They never mowed it before.
Do you think it was the same? For some reason, the grass seemed like really, really dense when I was there in June.
I don't know. Maybe I just never hit in there before, so I just never had to worry about it.
You always just stripe it on the green with your third shot.
It's just, I was putting for eagle.
And that is Nick Rules. I have to admit, I'm pretty excited about the Masters Invitational Golf Tournament. I'm really excited about the bit that we're gonna do. Have you looked at the sheet yet? We're gonna be recording it a little bit early. We're gonna be getting this one in the can because everyone's got some spring plans. So we're gonna be recording this soon. I'm quite excited. No, I can see by the look in your face.
I'm just taking these one at a time. You know, I'm doing my prep one week at a time. You don't focus on the next opponent until you finish the game. So, you know, we'll get there later.
I think that's right. Appreciate all of you for listening. Just please call ahead, check on the punch greens, do as I say, not as I do. And
I've got a Nick Rules next week on what you're allowed to do to repair aeration marks on the greens.
Oh, unbelievable.
Yeah, so buckle up for that one.
Oh, man. Okay. I'm very excited. I can't wait for Mad Golf for the week because it's going to be someone bitching about not being able to get into the Masters or something like that. It's going to be...
I saw on social media... this is probably not true. It's probably just farce. But somebody got practice round tickets to the Masters and they showed up with their clubs and thought they got practice round.
That was real. So that happened a couple of years ago. There was just this dude who showed up with his sticks and everyone's like, what the fuck are you doing? He's like... 11-17 Johnson.
Practice round.
I think I'm playing with Zach Johnson, the Ryder Cup captain. I'm going to talk to him for a few minutes about what I saw in full swing. I'm not
going to impress him a little bit on the spot. Captain's pick.
Make sure to call ahead, hit him straight, and when you don't, yell four as loud as you can.
I'm Lacey Evans. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you next time at the Turn.